There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always-on-the-verge-of-death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan. Additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Welcome to the AEW Match Guide podcast, where we deep dive into the best matches in AEW history. Brought to you by the Social Suplex Podcast Network and your host, Sam Brown.
Hello and welcome to the AEW Match Guide podcast. I'm your host, Sam Brown. Thank you for joining me. Every episode, alongside a special guest, I take an in-depth look at one of the best matches in AEW history. If you enjoy the show today, you can subscribe or rate it on your podcast app of choice, support the podcast financially through Red Circle, and make sure you check out all of the other great shows on the Social Suplex Podcast Network, where we cover all aspects of the world of pro wrestling. We've got One Nation Radio, Keeping It Strong Style, All Things Elite, Tunnel Talk, the Trish and Sarah Wrestling Podcast, Wrestle Art with Chris Things, and Imp's WWE Adventure. You can become part of the Social Suplex community by joining our Discord and check out the awesome match guide and Social Suplex merch on Chopped Tees. Links to all of these things are in the podcast description. My guest for today is from Pro Wrestling Musings, it's Sergi Alderman, and we're talking about Hangman Adam Page versus Darby Allin and Dynamite on the 31st of July, 2024. Sergi, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
It's fantastic to be here. Sergi, before we introduce you and start talking about the match, I do need to do just a little bit more housekeeping because coming up this weekend, we've got a very exciting thing happening here in Australia where I'm from. Grand Slam is coming to Australia. It's in Brisbane. And as part of that, there's various things going on with myself and the channel that I just want to let anyone who's listening in know about. So earlier this week, I was on another podcast called the Group Chat Wrestling Podcast, where we talked about Grand Slam, among other things. I've actually had one of the guys from the Group Chat Wrestling Podcast on this one, Andy. I had him back in December, and I got to return the favor and be on his podcast to chat about Grand Slam and, you know, just all other things going on, particularly in the world of AEW. But also, I will be at Grand Slam, and I've actually organized some stuff beforehand for if you too are going to be at Grand Slam, because one of the things I'm most excited about, having never been to an AEW show before, is meeting up with other AEW fans. I don't get to chat about AEW a whole lot in my real life. I don't have any other friends or colleagues or anything who are into AEW, so I'm keen as mustard to sit down and chat about AEW with other people who are into it as much as I am. So if you want to be part of that and you're going to be at Grand Slam, I've booked out a table at the Green Beacon Brew Pub from 1:30. That's approximately when I'll be there, maybe a little bit late. We'll see how quickly I can get from the airport to the pub. And I've booked in that table. It's close. It's in the valley. It's close to a train station. And before the show happens, we'll jump on a train. It's about a 20-minute train ride to get to the arena. So there'll be plenty of time to have a chat, have a drink, have some food, have some lunch, and yeah, get to know each other a little bit more before we jump on the train, head to the arena. The details for all of that are in the Discord. If you are going to be there, it would be great if you could let me know. I've booked a table, and so if there's more people than I expect, I may need to upgrade that table. So jump in the Discord or contact me whichever way you can to let me know. And if you can't make it there, but you will be at the arena, I'll be wearing my Match Guide shirt. So if you come, if you see the logo for the AEW Match Guide on a shirt, that's possibly me, come up and say hello. I'd love to see you there. And I've made a commitment. If I see you there in a Match Guide shirt or in a Social Suplex shirt, then you've got a drink on me. I hope that doesn't leave me too out of pocket. but thanks for indulging me there, Sergi. If you will.
Oh, absolutely.
Can you indulge me a little bit further? We don't normally talk about current events on this podcast, but because it is coming up this weekend, Sergi, can we talk about Grand Slam? I've got some things I'd love to say about it. But before I jump in and bulldoze all over this thing, I want to know, like, you're in a different country. This obviously doesn't mean as much, isn't going to mean as much to you as it does to me. What does Grand Slam feel like to you as a kind of a much more dispassionate observer?
Well, the thing about Grand Slam is that it's a really interesting opportunity to see a certain really good wrestlers get to be a hometown hero that don't usually get to be. And obviously we're talking about especially Toni Storm. I don't know for sure, but I think that she should be the main event. And then you've got
I agree with you, by the way.
Yes. Yeah. And then you've also got Buddy Murphy and gosh, what's her name?
Holly Cameron.
Harley Cameron, yes. And they're all really good. Harley Cameron has been getting a ton more recognition lately. And Toni Storm, I assume that they've been planning this a while to have this her whole storyline come to a peak at this time for this reason, because she'll be, you know, in her hometown. And in her case, I know before we started recording, we were talking about like why did they choose Brisbane, and it seems like maybe it may have been the wrong choice in terms of the market, but it is her hometown. Like literally, she grew up like a few miles from there, and in the case of those two, the two women, those are a couple of really great stories that they've got going on. Buddy Murphy doesn't have much of a story as much, but you know, he's got that talent. He's got that physicality that you throw him into something and have him, you know, throw a challenge out for the Continental title, I guess is probably what he's going to be going after. And that's going to be fun too, especially, like I said, with the opportunity to be a hometown hero and to get that hometown support. Well, home nation support in his case.
Yeah, obviously I'm really excited about it. But I've got such mixed feelings, because at the same time, I'm like both excited and disappointed. Because of course, originally this was sold as a stadium show, and you know, selling out a 50,000 seat stadium in Brisbane for a company that has very little brand recognition in Australia was always going to be, I'd say it's probably a fool's errand. Like maybe you could have done it in Sydney and Melbourne, possibly, you know, much bigger cities, much bigger wrestling communities, but doing it in Brisbane at Suncorp was always going to be a fool's errand. But, and so there's a sense of disappointment in that it's not a stadium show and they're not treating it like a stadium show in terms of how it's booked. You know, it's not going to have all of the AEW features. It kind of feels like a glorified TV episode of TV, which is great. Like I haven't been to an AEW TV show, but at the same time, like this is going to be probably the second biggest crowd that AEW pulls in this year. And it's going to be full of rabid fans such as myself who've never been to an AEW show. So this is going to be a wild crowd in front of a big crowd for AEW in 2025. Like the only shows that I think will have more fans at them, because the pay-per-views aren't pulling over 10K at this point, will probably be All in Texas. And if that's in a state, if that's, you know, I don't know, at the moment it seems like they've just sold over 10,000 seats, maybe 11,000 seats. That's a big stadium. Like that's going to be cavernous if they don't pack in some significantly like more numbers. And then probably Forbidden Door, which is happening in the UK. We don't know where that's going to be. I'm guessing that will also do well. But, you know, this is going to be a big crowd. Like, they could do something with this. You look at how the WWE use those Europe shows to really, like, show how exciting their product is, how hot their product is. And that's what they're going to have at their disposal here. And, you know, they've really flubbed the broadcasting of it. Like, that's been a bit of, that's been quite a mess. And then, you know, I just don't feel like they're necessarily putting their best foot forward. But at the same time, like, come bell time, I'm going to be eating well. Like, I'm going to be so excited for whatever they put in front of us, even if it is only Hometown Heroes. You know, and I'm really excited for this tag team match. You know, like, I've been fortunate enough to see a number of these guys wrestle before in Australia. Like, I've seen Kenny Omega wrestle in Australia. I've seen Kazuchika Okada. I've seen Ospreay. But even at the same time, I've never seen them, like, on this kind of stage. And particularly Omega and that tag match with Omega and Ospreay against Omega and Ospreay against Fletcher and Takeshita. Like, I'm no scholar on Australian indie wrestling, so, like, you know, this may be a long, you know, this may not be true, but that's got a chance to be, like, could this be the best match that's ever been wrestled in Australia, in the whole country? Like, I mean, it's got the people in it, right? Like, it's not like Kenny Omega's bumping around the Australian indies, right? Like, I know Will Ospreay's had some high-profile matches, and there's plenty of great wrestlers who come from Australia, but, you know, the sky with those four guys in the ring, like, the sky is literally the limit. This could be – I could be sitting there watching the greatest match that's ever been wrestled in my country, which is pretty awesome.
Well, that is definitely a very modern – perspective. Australia has if you go back to the old days, Australia pretty strong history. Jim Barnett did some amazing things over there, is what I've heard.
World Championship. So
if you're in the old school wrestling,
World Championship wrestling in Melbourne before the mid-70s was very popular. It was on public access TV. In terms of, like, public free-to-air TV, and they drew large crowds, like upwards of 30,000 people at one point to one particular show. But look, I've seen the tapes, and I'll take my modern wrestling over that personally, to be honest. But look, I don't know. I'm excited, and I guess I'm just curious. I'm curious what the feedback's going to be and what it's going to be, how it's going to be received outside of Australia. Because I know that, like, everyone in this arena is going to be nuts for it, because most of Australia is a long way away from America and England. Like, I know I've got friends in America who originally were saying, like, oh, when they come to Australia, I'll come down and see it, you know, thinking it's a similar sort of distance to between America and England. And America and England are very close. Like, we are literally the other side of the world. It is a long trip.
You're on a plane for a long time, and it's very expensive.
Exactly. Yeah, and so that means most Australians haven't been able to go over and see, and, you know, the big part is also COVID hit at one point as well. So, like, there's a big portion of the Australian wrestling fan base who've never seen AEW and will be very excited to see them come over. So, I'm over the moon about this, but as I said, it's tinged with a slight bit of disappointment. But at the same time, when the bell rings, I'll be frothing.
Well, to address what you were saying before, as far as the outside view, outside of Australia, I think that there's two big draws, and that is seeing fans who are especially happy to be there. Because they don't get the opportunity often, it always makes for a great show. You know, the first All In. Anytime that
first
a company goes to a place for the first time, it makes for a great show. And then also, Toni Storm is a fantastic storyteller, and this is the peak of this chapter of that story. And I think that people are... I think that that's as good of a best foot forward as AEW has right now, with the possible exception of Hangman and Swerve, but they aren't at the peak of any of their stories right now, if you see what I mean. I'm curious if they have any plans for them. I haven't for if they're going to be doing anything much at Grand Slam. It is that I don't know if that's really clear yet, but but yeah, Toni Storm, I think that that, and then also like it'll be fun to watch the Australians, the appreciative Australian crowd, enjoy their enthusiasm.
Yeah, I will say at time of recording, the three guys who I want to see and I've never seen live that I really would love to, Hangman, Swerve, and Orange Cassidy. I've never seen any of those guys live, and I would love to. At time recording, they don't have a match booked. Who knows what will happen? You know, they may get flown over here for that, for something, or may not. I'm not sure. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. Anyway, look, let's move along. We are here to talk about a match that happened a while ago. This isn't a current events podcast, as I often say. We're just indulging ourselves a little bit here. But we are here to talk about Darby Allin versus Hangman Adam Page. Sergi, this isn't your first time on the podcast. You were previously on here to talk about Maki Ito versus Rio Mizunami, which wildly is my second most downloaded episode of the podcast. And it's actually one of my favorite episodes that we talked about as well. You know, like it was such I love the episodes that are off the beaten path a little bit. And that was well and truly off the beaten path. But something a little bit different to that today, in Darby versus Hangman Adam Page. You actually asked to cover this match. What was the reason for that, Sergi?
I think that it's one of my favorite, sleeper matches of the year. It wasn't a match that anybody is likely to vote as a match of the year. It's not a match that I would even vote as my match of the year. It didn't excel in that way, in the sense of, oh wow, I saw something that magical. It's like, well, no, but it was really very, very good, and it had a lot of things going for it in terms of just being an entertaining Dynamite main event, probably one of the best ones of the year, and also just because Hangman and Darby specifically are just two of my favorites right now and probably approaching all time, for different reasons. And this is their first and only meeting, which kind of makes it special. And I think that that's something that is kind of an AEW secret weapon, is something that that Tony Khan does, is he holds back a specific match that hasn't happened yet. And it's like, that's my ace in the hole. If I want to shake things up a little bit, here, have a matchup that we've never seen of two guys that have a big fan base, and I've kept them apart up until now, and this is an example of that, and a really good example of that, and just great storytelling. Not a match of the year level thing, but a great example of wrestling your character, and everything that both wrestlers was doing was about telling their separate stories. They didn't have a story together. They were not in a rivalry and still aren't. They met once and moved on with their lives, as we were talking about before we started recording. But in that meeting, they each told their stories, and they did a great job of that. And all of the action and the climax and the result were all a part of who they are as characters in that moment.
Yeah, that's very well put there, Sergi. And I love that you highlighted how, you know, like both of these guys have been with AEW since day one, but they'd never met each other, and both are fan favorites for good reason. Like Hangman, you know, Darby is arguably, I'd say him and OC are probably the two best television wrestlers in the history of Dynamite. Like they've been the two best television wrestlers since Dynamite started. Hangman, not so much. He's more of a feature wrestler, but you know, if you start looking at it, there's very few other wrestlers that have performed as well when the big, you know, on the big stage than Hangman has. He's almost like the best pay-per-view, one of the best pay-per-view wrestlers that AEW's had. And as you said, mm-hmm. these two never met. And Tony Khan had held off on having these two guys meet for, you know, for whatever reason. He just never saw the need to put them in front of one another, and their paths never crossed storyline-wise. It was very exciting when the graphic drops, and we're going to get into all of the things that you said there. You previewed what we're going to talk about very well, very succinctly. But let's start. We're not going to go all the way back, as you said, like both of us love both of these characters, and their stories are well told. But let's just kind of look at where they're at in 2024, in the lead up to this match. We'll start with Darby Allin. If I'm going to be honest, I feel like he had a very strange start to the year in 2024, his first 6 months or so. Like, he starts the year in the tag scene with Sting. He plays an absolutely unforgettable role in that incredible match, nearly bleeding to death in Sting's retirement match. He then has a one-off singles match with Jay White. He then joins the AEW side of Anarchy in the Arena and Blood and Guts against the Elite. He ultimately wins the Blood and Guts match for Team AEW, kind of earning a TNT title shot at All In the process against the scapegoat Jack Perry. But before they get to that, literally like the same night or at Rampage a couple of days later in the canon, I guess, broadcast date, he then also wins the Royal Rampage and becomes the number one contender for the AEW World Championship. But this is after the Owen Cups happened and established Bryan Danielson as the number one contender for the AEW championship. So he's mm-hmm. kind of like become the second number one contender while he also has two title shots on the boil at the same time. It's like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. It seems messy to me, if I'm going to be honest. It doesn't seem slick. He's got this TNT title shot, and then he's also the number one contender for the AEW championship. What are your thoughts on that Darby Allin in 2024 in the lead up to this match?
Well, I think that you make a good point. I'd kind of forgotten about the TNT title shot. And it does seem strange to have him going after the TNT title, failing, while also having a world title shot in his, you know, in his belt, so to speak. It was a weird decision. But if we take a step back and sort of ignore the TNT title aspect of it, basically being the key to the winning of the Blood and Guts match for Team AEW over the Elite, and in the same night, or depending on how you interpret canon, in the same week at least, earning a future world title shot. Can't really call it a number one contendership when someone is already number one contender, but yeah, a future number one contendership, yeah, or a future world title shot down the road is a really, you're kind of on a high of your career. And then obviously there's going to be people who are going to want to pull you down from that, which kind of leads us to the Hangman.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you put it in an interesting way there. Like, you know, he's on like this roll of momentum. So why would he not want to try and capitalize on that? And he was definitely the right person to put in those matches, like the Blood and Guts match and the Anarchy in the Arena match. You know, it's not his fault that both those matches sort of became really toothless in terms of what the actual consequences of them were. And he played his role in them very well, particularly Anarchy in the Arena, I think of. Like, he took some horrendous punishment in that. I like what the spin you've put on it there with him. You know, he wins the TNT title shot. He's the reason that they've won the Blood and Guts. He's like, yeah, heck yeah, I'm going to go in this Royal Rampage. And he's riding high on momentum and manages to win it. And, you know, why wouldn't you want to try and win both belts at once? So if you can, you know, and he's not the kind of guy who does thing. He's the kind of guy that takes a big risk. He takes big swings, Darby mm-hmm. Allin. He's not someone to, mitigate risk, so to speak. But let's move on to Hangman. He has a very different path through 2024. He comes into the year, after being destroyed, almost completely mentally, emotionally, physically by Swerve Strickland in that Texas death match in Full Gear 2023. He shows up mm-hmm. at the start of the year and goes back and forth with Swerve, trying to deny him a chance to win the AEW title. That was a very interesting way they used the rankings, which they brought back probably felt like almost just for that just for that little back and forth that Swerve and Hangman were having. But then ends up in a triple threat match at Revolution 2024 with Samoa Joe and Swerve. And in the midst of that, he assaults Bryce Remsburg and winds up tapping out to Samoa Joe before going on hiatus. Mm-hmm. In kayfabe, I think he gets suspended for that, for the assault on Bryce Remsburg. It's easy to forget how integral Hangman was to the start of the year for AEW. I feel like we've kind of collectively wiped that from our minds. It just doesn't get talked about at all. He was all over the main event scene alongside Swerve in the January, February.
Right. Well, and if Swerve is going to be in the main event scene and Hangman is there at that point, up until the point of the lights out cage match, when after that they're no longer tied together. But up until that point, anytime that one of them is there, the other one has to be there. There's no way to keep them apart until that completes, other than the suspension. The suspension surprised me because I didn't know the real life reason for it at the time. Mm. Nobody really did. It was one of those things of it's strange because in pro wrestling terms, someone with that much motivation would defy that suspension. So it doesn't really work as a kayfabe reason if he's really not going to be around. Maybe they should have done a stretcher job instead, or something that you could say, okay, there's nothing that there's genuinely no way that he can, when Swerve got his shot at Joe one-on-one, it was just surprising that Hangman didn't show up to try to stop it, to try to, screw him. But on the flip side, there were good real life reasons for it. And, it made for a very good opportunity to just see Swerve achieve all of the goals that he'd been trying to achieve and have this high for him to come down from as we reach All Out, a little bit later after the match that we're talking about tonight.
I've got to say, I liked the way they used the rankings with Hangman mm-hmm. and Swerve. And I also loved the way you saw Hangman slowly unravel across those months mm-hmm. and slowly the facade of him as, previously, a very righteous character, sort of slowly mm-hmm. and a very just character as well, who took the moral high ground. You see that facade slip a little bit as he goes through, he celebrates just getting a draw and he celebrates that Swerve can't, and it's done very subtly, slowly, mm-hmm. To the point where he is trying to keep up appearances and, he tries to win that triple threat legitimately, but when he can't, then everything slips. He assaults the referee and, mm-hmm. and the full moral decay is complete. Then he's kicked off TV, I guess. And then that allows him to go away. As you said, there was real life reasons behind it, but it's kind of like he went away after, cause he lost himself and he was either going to go away. He was either going to come back having, reconsidered his path, or he's going to come back and he's not going to, that meme of, don't back down, double down. He's either going to come back having reconsidered his path, or he's going to double down. And when he comes back, it's fair to say he doubled down. And, you know,
by a lot.
Darby ends up in Yes, significantly. And, you know, he played a part in the Blood and Guts match. He was part, he, you know, went through the Owen Hart Cup. He lost in the final to Bryan Danielson. He went into the Blood and Guts match to get it Swerve there. But he wasn't satiated by what he was able to do to Swerve in the Blood and Guts match. He wanted to take everything from him. And of course, the reason Darby ends up in Hangman's sights, and the reason that I think there's actually a bit of a slick bit of booking how they ended up together, is because Darby wins that number one contendership, or wins that title shot, I guess, at Grand Slam. And Hangman goes, well, if I beat this guy, then I can have that. And, you know, it's never explicitly stated, but it makes sense that that's kind of the way that it would work, because that is how AEW has worked in the past, with the way that they've, you know, had people jockeying for championship championship matches. So I think it's a bit of a slick bit of booking to get these two men into a match together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as long as Swerve was champion, it made sense that Hangman would do anything to become number one contender, because it was his one road to get to Swerve. Once Swerve lost the world title, it became a completely different situation. He didn't need to be a number one contender in order to get to Swerve, and thus we get All Out. Now, after All Out, it becomes a very different situation of he's sort of lost without a specific goal. He'll say, well, I'm going to focus on the AEW title, but he has this addiction to revenge. This is how I see his character, is that he has, like, when the arson incident occurred, that was his one moment where he felt okay again for a minute. And he's chasing getting that feeling back, and he doesn't know where to get it. That's kind of what, like, just recently, Christopher Daniels was like, I hope you can be happy now. And he's just taken aback by this, because nothing he's doing is making him happy. But that's getting quite a bit beyond this one match.
Yeah, indeed. Well, let's jump into the match, because there weren't a whole lot of there was no direct promos at each other beforehand, which, you know, maybe that's a bit of a missed opportunity. They didn't, you know, even just have, you know, 1 minute at one another, you know, Renee Paquette is back with Hangman Adam Page. Hangman, what's your thoughts before this match with Darby Allin? You know, I think it's a bit of a miss that they didn't do that, particularly given that these guys had been in the company so long, never faced each other. It's a first time match, and it was the main event as well. So they could have done that throughout the show. But you know, it's, you know, it didn't happen, so we can't talk about it.
I think it's a case of, it kind of makes sense because this was not a grudge match in any sense. These two individuals don't have anything against each other, not specifically. Now, they could have had a few words to say about, like, you know, why is this match important, or what would it mean to get a win over so-and-so. But just skipping it, you know, kind of makes sense in the sense of, you know, the reason we're having this match is we are professional wrestlers and it is our job to beat each other. And I think that at website that I'm an editor for, Craig's website, Pro Wrestling Musings, there's an article that recently came out that was called, you know, are there too many angles these days in AEW? Does AEW relying on angles too much, in the sense of is there too much reliance on everything being a feud and everything having a reason behind it, and no longer being as much of, I think that an important aspect of AEW is that generally they do not have the attitude of, if these two people are going to fight, we have to make up some reason for it. Like, well, they're professional wrestlers. That's the reason. They don't have to spill coffee on each other.
That's fair. I still think even in that situation, there's a chance when you've got two guys that the fans are so into, there's it's an opportunity miss. They didn't just have something just given who it is. And I don't disagree with you on principle there. You know, that you can't just have two people, particularly if they were to bring back the rankings, but I feel like you can't do it again at this point. Like if you do it again at this point, you've got to be married to doing it forever. Cause like you can't do what they did at the start of 2024 and have it come back for like 2 months. You know, and in that instance, you definitely can have just, these are two people that are facing each other because they want to progress up the rankings. And even without that, you can still have, you know, these guys are scheduled to face each other because we're a professional wrestling company. We're putting on professional wrestling matches for it. And the implications will be that this person has won. So he's progressed towards a hypothetical goal of his to face a TNT champion or face the AEW champion or face the international champion or face the Cod, I don't know, whoever they want to have. Yeah. I don't disagree with you. As I said, like just with these guys, should mean something during Dynamite. Anyway, let's move along though. Let's get onto the match. Mm-hmm. Before we get to the match though, I would like to let everyone know about the Social Suplex merch line on Chopped Tees. So our merch, it has been uniquely designed to reflect the colorful characters of each show on the network. One Nation Radio have got hats and shirts and hoodies in the design of the Dream Team. Keeping It Strong Style have got zip-up hoodies. Tunnel Talk, they've got snuggies. They've got drinks with crazy straws coming out of it. Imp's got a teacup. But my personal favorite, of course, is my match guide shirts and hoodies. The site's owner, Dickie, and I, we put them together and we wanted it to stand out in a sea of bland wrestling designs. And we also wanted to celebrate the AEW 5th anniversary match guide list that we released back in 2024 to commemorate the 5th anniversary of AEW. And we did it with the show's logo on the front, and then we listed the top 50 AEW matches in the style of an old school world tour t-shirt on the back. And the thing that stood out to me most when I got my shirt was the quality of it. We've all had wrestling shirts that stretch or fade after you've only worn them a few times, but these shirts are made from high quality materials, so they don't just look great, but they feel great and they last. Chopped Tees ship globally at no extra cost. They've got no tax at checkout, and your first order on the site is eligible for 10% off. At the Social Suplex, we're incredibly proud of this collaboration, so don't wait. Head straight to chopped-tees.com/social-suplex and get yourselves some merch that will not just look great, but will feel great and will help the network out. That's chopped-tees.com/social-suplex, and we thank Chopped Tees for this collaboration.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.
So let's get into the match. And as we always do here on the AEW Match Guide, we'll give the match its flowers. Dave Meltzer gave this match 4.25 stars. Cage Match currently has it rated at 7.74. And we have not rated this match in the definitive match guide because it happened after we did the most recent edition of it. I think if we did one for the year, it would probably rank, I think, in the 30s somewhere, Sergi. That would be my guess. If I had to, if I had to, you know, Babe Ruth it and call my shot.
Seems reasonable.
There'd be some people who put it in their top 15. But this match takes place on the 31st of July, 2024 at Greensville, South Carolina. And it is in the main event slot of Dynamite. Hangman is out first. Comes out of the face tunnel, interestingly. Excalibur notes that as Hangman walks the ring, that Hangman still believes that he walks the righteous path. But Tony Schiavone suggests that Hangman's actions during Blood and Guts might suggest otherwise. Put a pin in that thought for what happens in this match. And then the commentators note on Darby's entrance that he is set to get a match for the AEW title at Grand Slam, which of course never actually happens. So they get to the ring. We get dueling chants as they start their back and forth. And as they start to engage, we get the immediate pattern for this match. And they set it up straight away. Darby using his agility against Hangman to dodge and knock Hangman out of the ring, kind of off his feet a little bit. But he will need to do more to work Hangman down, as when he tries to follow up with a coffin drop to the outside, Hangman is immediately able to catch him and use his power to suplex him to the outside. Immediately, they have great physical chemistry, Sergi. It's pretty amazing. These guys have never wrestled before, and straight away they're pulling off these moves as smooth as butter.
Yeah, they're an incredibly great physical chemistry in the sense of, well, like I said, they are fantastic at wrestling their character, but they're also just really, really amazing athletes, and they work together perfectly. And also they're, especially with the direction that Hangman's character has been going in terms of increasing viciousness, works really well with the kind of matches that what Darby is good at, which is taking a beating taking a beating in a way that's fun to watch.
After Hangman suplexes Darby on the ramp, he's immediately got kids in the crowd yelling at him. So kids in the crowd are against him. Darby like sort of crawls up the ramp and Hangman follows him, but he's sort of distracted by Bryce Remsburg. And he's like, Bryce is telling him to get back to the ring, and Hangman tells him, "I'll beat your ass again." Truly the actions of a righteous man.
Well, and there's one other aspect of it. I mean, the whole thing is that the suplexed on the outside from catching the attempt at the
coffin drop
spot. The whole point of that is to get them to this point, is to get them up the ramp to where the big spot's going to happen. The thing that distracts him isn't just that that Bryce is trying to get them back into the ring, but Bryce is trying to get him to put down a steel chair. He has a steel chair with some evil intent, and it's like, you know, I'm going to disqualify you. And eventually he gives up the steel chair. He tosses it to the side, but this is distracted. This has distracted him from what Darby's doing long enough for Darby to recover enough and do what he's doing without Hangman paying more attention to Bryce, and for him to climb up the staging to go for another coffin drop, an even more impressive coffin drop than from the top turnbuckle, and this one it connects, it's probably the biggest spot of the most exciting spot of the match, and it happens so early. I love that they throw that out really early, in the sense of, you know, they had to kind of set up this to kind of even things out because Hangman, you know, is just, he's bigger, and they needed to even out a little bit to keep it from being too much of a Hangman dominating.
I love the progression. You just outlined it there, Sergi. I love the logical progression of this. It's like 3 minutes in, and there's so much character packed into it. And the way that the action is flowing is logically based off those characters. So you've got, like, you know, the first beat of the match is Darby uses his smarts and speed to outwit and outpace Hangman, but he's not, the coffin drop doesn't have enough power when he goes off the turnbuckle. Hangman gets distracted. Once again, Darby uses his pace and his smarts to take advantage of this distraction. And this time, he hits the coffin drop off a higher thing, and this time it's powerful enough. Like, it seems so basic, but it makes so much sense when Darby's like learning and programming and working it out, And this time, you know, he's got off. So he's like, okay, my coffin drop's not effective off a turnbuckle. Well, I'll just go off something higher then. Because I don't have any regard for my body. I just want to deal out pain to the other person. And this time I've found something that's higher, and I've found something that's high enough that I can make the impact that I want. It, you know, like, and then of course, we, as you said, like we've got Hangman's, you know, his descent, he doesn't like being outsped and outpaced and these things. And he's immediately looking to get some sort of revenge and immediately looking to deal out damage in a brutal sense, in a brutal way. It says so much about him as well, that this is how that he's able to be distracted this way.
And the other thing is that I kind of forgot until you mentioned it, that there's a third character that that in this context anyway, Bryce is also a character because he was a part of Hangman's story. It's like, oh yeah, that's right. One of the reasons that he's that Hangman's distracted is that Bryce was part of the reason he got suspended. And that's one of the things he's upset about.
I'll probably never cover it, so because I'm not going to do the triple threat. But Bryce took a hell of a bump when Hangman threw him out of the ring in the in the triple threat match that he had with Swerve and Samoa Joe. Hell of a bump from Bryce Remsburg there. So he's a I love Bryce Remsburg. Can't get enough of him.
He's one of the best refs ever.
Absolutely,
for sure.
So yeah, look, back to the action though. So Darby. Darby takes Hangman back to the ring after, you know, getting the advantage of him in the coffin drop. But he doesn't have Hangman down for long enough. It doesn't last. Hangman takes back over and he's just laying, you know, heavy strikes on Darby, heavy hands. You know, like Hangman was always a heavy hitter. But this new character, as you said, like the emphasis is on his power. And his ability to deal out damage. He's even taken away some of the previous moves that he used and just gone for, you know, more blunt force trauma. And Darby is the perfect kind of wrestler to take this sort of offense. You know, like you see him when he goes against someone like Brody King, and it's just so good that, you know, the way that he just allows his body to be thrown about and ragdolled and bent in half is so perfect for Hangman in this form.
And you know, the thing is that with Hangman, it's not just about power, but also about expressing his anger and expressing his character through that power, through that those power moves or the strikes. Especially you see it in this sequence, these what would you call that kind of strike? Across
ground and pound, almost.
The forearm to the back. It's such a brutal thing because you know you hit somebody facing them. That's a fight. You hit somebody from behind, and that's an assault. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and he's a wrestler who's just like constantly bubbling with barely contained rage at the injustice of what's happened to him and how the crowd has gone behind Swerve despite what Swerve did to him. And you know, it like just explodes with those strikes that you're talking about.
Yeah. I think that way back when before he got suspended, but after Texas Deathmatch, it was the fact that he started hitting people when they were down from behind. It was the thing that was like, yeah, this guy is not staying face. He's going heel. It was the first thing that made me like, yeah, he's turning.
So we need to touch on it. I kind of don't want to, but we need to touch on it about at the halfway mark or so into this match. The majority of the lights in the arena randomly just switch off. And, the crowd
is very strange.
Yeah, the crowd sort of half reacts to it, and Tony Schiavone mentions it because, like, we watch American wrestling. Normally, the lights turn off, and they come back on, and the Undertaker or Bray Wyatt or Malachi Black standing in the ring. and Schiavone even kind of says, like, "Oh, I kind of expecting someone to come out because, like, he's just trying to acknowledge it." It was obviously just something weird in the arena happened. Like, I don't know. Prince Nana flicked the switch or something just to mess with Hangman.
Well, you know, it's one of those things. It's like, it is a live performance. Yep. It is live television. These things will happen.
Yeah, I hate it for these two performers, but it's just like such a weird moment in this match. And I mean, we're reviewing the match. We can't not acknowledge it. But, you know, let's move on. The lights come back on and Hangman and Darby just are like, oh, well, I guess we just keep wrestling. They don't even react to it. But Hangman, you know, he has Darby hanging over the apron at this point. And he, you know, grabs the steel chairs. He comes back and he takes Darby. He picks him up. And, you know, this is where you get like such a clear comparison of what their size is. And he just hits these short, sharp power bombs on the side of the apron. Like, you know, we've mm-hmm. seen, you know, the Kevin Owens, the big power bomb on the apron where he like releases them and everything is one thing, but this is almost, you know, this is not as big because he's only doing short, sharp ones, but he's just doing, you know, over and over again, one after the other, bang, bang, bang. It's almost it's brutal in its own way. And then he hits, mm-hmm. you know, like this giant fall away slam onto those steel steps, you know, tossing Darby around like a rag doll. And when he's doing it, like there's like almost something really intimate and intense with the way Hangman gets Darby's legs up for the power bomb, and like it, everything is so close and intimate in that moment when he's dealing out that pain.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think what's interesting here is that technically, I mean, certainly there's always going to be, there still are folks who will always root for the Hangman. And heck, I mean, MJF mentioned it today. Hangman, you know, Hangman has done nothing wrong. But technically, within this match, he's the heel. He's wrestling as a heel, very much so. This whole segment is something that could be qualified as a heat sequence in the sense of, you know, the part of the match where we build up that the good guy is taking punishment and the bad guy is beating him down, and it's intended to build suspense that, like, is the good guy going to be able to come back, that kind of thing. The whole concept of heat sequence, and the thing about heat sequences is that some wrestling critics are like, this is the most important part of a match. It's critical to storytelling. And yet it's usually something that that's where we put the commercial break a lot of the time. A lot of people find them really boring. I usually find them pretty boring, especially if they're done not as well. Sort of de rigueur. Darby and Hangman are a perfect example of how you don't do that, how you don't bore people with your heat sequence. They're both so great at that, individually and especially together, because Hangman's brutalizing someone is interesting because of his anger. And Darby keeps him getting killed from being this slog because he does these crazy bumps that are fun to watch. And you were talking about, like, you know, he bends up like a pretzel, and it's crazy and it's interesting. And also he's great at timing his hope spots to keep you aware that, oh, he's still in this. And of course we just know from our history of watching Darby that he can come back from all kinds of crazy stuff and that he's a slinky.
Yeah. And with this heat sequence, like, there's so, as I said, like, it just feels so personal the way that, mm-hmm. like, it's so, that it's up close, and there's so many close camera shots of Hangman's face as well. Like, even after this, he some random fan in the audience, like, says something about Swerve, and Hangman's eyes just like pop out of his head, and he just starts yelling at this fan. Mm-hmm. You know, like, and there's just so many close up shots of Hangman's face. Like, I don't know, there's just something intimate and personal about the brutality that Hangman's doing, you know, and part of that, I like to think that, like, that production is trying to mirror the story of, like, the anger to Hangman, it's coming from a place that is so personal. And the reason that the rage is so palpable and so uncontrollable is because it's so personal to him, what's happened to him. And it's so, and he's barely able to contain it. And he's, you know, purely driven by it. You know, and he just continues to brutalize Darby. But Darby, you know, like he gets tarred with the brush of being like a stuntman. And I've talked about Darby a few times on this podcast before, particularly if you want to go back and listen to my discussion with another guy from Pro Wrestling Musings, Dan, about his series with Cody Rhodes. He gets tarred with the brush of being like a Jeff Hardy daredevil. But there's like such a... He's got like a unique blend in his offense of technical ability and smarts, like a street smart scrappiness to him. Because the way he gets back into this match, it's not by being a daredevil. It's by like seeing an opportunity to whip Hangman's feet from underneath him, to do a double leg takedown. And then, you know, you see that, you know, it's, I'd be a fool to say there's not a daredevil nature to it, but there's like this blend of like technical speed, technique, speed, and then the scrappiness and the willingness to treat himself like a stunt, you know, like a, you know, like a human, a human crash test dummy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause you've got him, the way he gets back into it, he does that double leg takedown and then he rips his belt off and he's slapping Hangman with his belt. He's whipping him. And then he hits like just one of his incredible suicide dives, which come, you know, through the bottom rope, and he just launches himself like a cannon. And that, you know, that allows him to get his offense back in. And I just love how Darby's offense is just that. It's such a unique blend. I don't think anyone has that sort of blend of offense.
Oh, absolutely. That's a really good way of phrasing it. He is incredibly unique, and because he has so many strengths that we don't see going together quite so often. You know, he has the speed of some of your fastest wrestlers, comparable to a Leo Rush. You know, he has grappling technique at the level of some of the highest ones. If you get into a grappling sequence with him, he keeps up with anybody. And then he also is just willing to do crazy stunts. And then, you know, if somebody is brawling, he'll fight as dirty as anybody. And all those together just make it, you know, and the funny thing is, it's like, and it takes all of those together to make him a credible as a heavyweight, because he's tiny, you know, and he needs all of those strengths to make up for it.
And we get that contrast again that we kind of talked about with the size and the power. Darby, after getting on the front foot, he hits a coffin drop, but he's caught in a rear naked choke position. He then folds it over to try and get a pinfall on Hangman. Only gets a one count though. But then he somewhat inexplicably goes to the outside and tries to hit a buckshot lariat on Hangman, which Hangman just... He sort of dodges and counters with just a huge lariat of his own. I don't know. Whenever someone hits a buckshot lariat in AEW, I have to think, is this a shot at CM Punk? Or is this a shot at Logan? Is this a shot at Logan Paul? Is this like, see, I can do it. There's no problems for me.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. It does make you think that. I think that that whole reversal sequence was so smoothly done, just straight from, you know, coffin drop, the sleeper, and then reversing again the sleeper into a pin predicament. And you know, the fact that there was a kick out isn't really the point. It's you couldn't hold the sleeper because you had to kick out. And I think that it was just like such a cool thinking wrestler sequence.
And it foreshadows what's literally just about to happen in the final moments. You know, Hangman in that rear, Hangman thinks he's got him in the rear naked choke, but Darby's able to fold him up and go for that, you know, use his technique to go for that and smarts to go for that pin. And in the final moments, we get Hangman, he hits two dead eyes, goes for a buckshot lariat, but Darby collapses, so he's able to avoid it by collapsing. But Hangman goes to pick up Darby, and the trap sprung. Darby grabs Hangman, Hangman's wrist, rolls him up, and manages to get the three count to get the victory. It's a very well constructed finish, Sergi, and it's really well foreshadowed in that movement that happens literally just before it.
Yep, no, I agree. I think that it's great because it fits their character so perfectly. Hangman's whole character, going back, gosh, actually, even when he was a babyface, it was true. He's his own worst enemy. He's his only real enemy, in the sense of he is so good. Like, he is basically he has a lot of the same advantages that Darby does, except he's also big, if you see what I'm saying. And he is so good that he is basically the only one who beats him is himself, usually, with the weird exception of Switchblade Jay White. But putting that to the side, if he isn't successful, it's because he gets in his own way. And that's based on impatience, lack of focus, and just looking past people because he's just mad or...
lacking
before
confidence.
The anger, there was, yeah, some sort of confidence issue or insecurity, but that was sort of a different era for the character. But there was always something, some issue internally in his own mind and his own, that he was getting in his own way. And this is a perfect example of that. You know, he's just got this blazing anger, and he's just hitting him with these the Deadeye move, and they're just, you know, he seems dead, and it's like, well, I want to hit him with one more thing, my big thing, and the classic collapse bit, just like Kenny and Okada do the collapse bit. It's very much like a callback to that kind of thing. And the thing about a collapse bit is it says, you know, you could have pinned him. But now he's got time to you know, get a little...
catch his breath.
Recovery.
Quickly recover.
Yes, exactly. Get a little recovery. And now, you know, a roll-up is the perfect way for him to lose in this case. It's just, you know, like he thought he already had it, so he wasn't... He stopped really wrestling defensively because he wasn't even thinking that there was anything left, that Darby had anything left. And Darby always has something left.
Mm. Yeah, and time again in this match, Darby sets up traps for Hangman and is able to take advantage when Hangman's distracted or lost in his emotions. And it kind of fits, you know, like the more I'm thinking about it, the more I'm kind of liking that Darby. I said before it was messy that Darby's like the number one contender for the TNT title, but he's also going to Grand Slam in New York to fight for the title. Like this is a guy who's operating at peak form, right? Like he's peaking in terms of his performance in the ring and his ability to win. And so of course he can take advantage of Hangman at, you know, even though Hangman's able to deal out damage, like Darby is operating at peak performance. And so he's just able to take advantage as soon as there's an opportunity. And that's what happens every time in this match. Like we talked about the very first exchange, he's able to take advantage because he's got the better speed. And then he's immediately afterwards able to take advantage because Hangman's distracted. Like, and then time and time again through this, whenever he gets, it's because he's able to like take advantage of some sort of emotional outpouring from Hangman where he's getting lost in his own head and he's not actually wrestling Darby anymore. He's distracted by other things. And it's funny. I mentioned before, you know, like you brought me previously Ryo Mizunami versus Maki Ito. And I think it actually has a lot in common with this match in terms of like neither of them are highly acclaimed matches, I think it's fair to say. Like none of them, we've just going through the processes of doing, you know, match of the year lists and things like that. And, you know, no one is saying that this is Hangman or Darby's best match of the year by a long way.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, like it's able to pack so much character into the match. And that's what I love so much about that Maki Ito and Ryo Mizunami match as well. Like it's just, it's like 12 minutes and it's just so packed full of character and everything in the action is driven by who these mm-hmm. people are, and it stems logically from that in such True. A great way. And that's exactly what this match does.
But in a way also opposite, because in the sense of Maki Ito and Ryo Mizunami, they were showcasing their character because they knew they were getting an audience that didn't already know their character. So they needed to, you know, through all of their motion, through everything they were doing, tell the this new audience that didn't know them as well.
They needed to introduce themselves.
And they did. They were introducing themselves with this match, and they did such a great job of it. I think it's a shame that Maki Ito hasn't done more stuff in the USA. I mean, I don't follow GCW, so I don't know what she's been doing. But this is the opposite of that. The audience watching this knows these men so well, and they just play into that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, I get what you're
we
saying.
We already know who they are. Yeah. They're not introducing themselves. They're just demonstrating who they are once again, because we already know. So they're able to build on that.
Sergio, I think I've said everything I need to say about this match specifically. We can move on to the legacy. Mm-hmm. Is there anything you'd like to add though?
About the match? No.
No,
I think that was that we covered the things I wanted to talk about the match. It was just such a fun match. I was glad to have a chance to talk about it in the sense of, like, here, this was an amazing year for both men, and here was them facing each other in a match that isn't acclaimed, but is just a lot of fun and something that is worth revisiting.
Yeah, I, as I said, I just loved revisiting this match. It was not something I planned on revisiting and re-looking at and re-examining. I remember enjoying it at the time, but yeah, I'm so glad I went back and did watch it, because it's such a two incredible performers and they're both operating really, like, you know, we talk about, you know, in the kayfabe, Darby Allin is in peak. The pinnacle of his performance and on top of his game in the kayfabe. But, you know, as a sense in terms of, like, these guys as wrestling performers, pro wrestling performers, they are just so in the zone in this match. And it's awesome to see two wrestlers performing in that way. But, you know, there isn't, like, a whole lot to talk about. Normally we talk about the legacy and what happened in the wash-up of this match, like, and, you know, the story that continued on afterwards. But there's not a whole lot in terms of this match. These two kind of came together because of everything else that was going on in their lives. And they sort of just afterwards, you know, it was an intersection point for them. But, you know, once they had completed what they did in this match, they sort of continued on with the broader stories that were progressing. You know, Hangman in terms of chasing Swerve, Darby Allin went on to face Jack Perry at All Out. Oh, sorry, All In. The one thing I did want to address, though, is, and I'll probably cover it in more depth at some point in the podcast. I know I will at some point, but it really needs to be said. Like, I feel like it's such a shame the mess they made of the title shot that Darby won for Grand Slam. And I feel like we should bring this up because it's mentioned at multiple points during this match. And it's sort of what Darby is heading towards, and it's what brought these two together, is that he has this AEW title shot for Grand Slam. And of course, we now know that, like, that never happened sort of got retconned and changed into a match with Jon Moxley, which Jon Moxley won. And, you know, I think, I don't know, with the benefit of hindsight, I think it's pretty clear that change of plans was probably a pretty poor call. What do you think, Sergi?
Well, I think that when it comes to people's dissatisfaction with the Death Riders, I'm probably in the minority, in the sense that I'm not looking to second guess what they should have done or if a different route would have been better. I mean, it really depends on, I mean, you can always say, well, what if they had made so-and-so the champion instead of Moxley or so-and-so? People will say it should have been Hangman. And my reply to that is that I have every confidence, because I have been giving a lot of thought to Hangman's stories, that Hangman has been telling the stories he wants to tell. And we should let him do that. You know,
they're generally very good, to be fair.
Yes, exactly. It's like, I do not believe that that Adam Page, that the performer who is behind Adam Page, is saying, I want to be the world champion, and they're telling him no. He has his stories he wants to tell, and he is being allowed to tell them, and that's a very good thing. And I think that the Death Rider story is one that it's understandable that it's frustrating people because some things have gone wrong in terms of poor follow-up of given story threads that has led to people being frustrated and kind of losing their faith in it and interest in it. And I get that. But I think that essentially it's a good story. It's just one that has probably real world reasons why certain things about it haven't turned out the way that they had intended it to. But like the heart of the story in terms of like the character that Moxley's playing is a good character. It's a good big bad for the promotion as a whole that could and probably should have worked better if things had gone better in like on a granular level.
I will say that it did start out very well. Like
exactly.
The initial angle was incredible. That they used to, you know, it all out with him putting the bag over Danielson's head. And then even, you know, the match with Danielson as well, as much as I didn't particularly care for Danielson's title reign, like the actual match that they had at WrestleDream was really good. And, you know, probably the monkey's paw version of Darby winning the title, being the one to win the title off Danielson, is Christian Cage has got this title shot. He's going to cash in straight away afterwards. Mm-hmm. And that's got its whole other litany of problems that I'd get. So yeah, look, I don't know. It just felt like a mess with what, you know, how Darby won a shot. And then, you know, if you weren't going to give it to him, then just don't let him win it at the first, particularly given that he was already scheduled for a match with Scapegoat Jack Perry. He'll always be Jungle Boy in my heart. I'll always be singing Tarzan Boy. that he was scheduled for that match at All In when he won the world title shot. So, yeah, I guess we'll never know. We'll never know what truly happened. Or maybe we will. Maybe, you know, someday there'll be shoot interviews that'll come out, or books or something that'll come out, and we'll find out what truly happened to make the change of plans happen. But that's not necessarily the purview of this podcast or in the remit of talking about these two. But look, I'm really glad you brought this match to me, Sergi. Is there anything in particular you'd like to say about what happened afterwards as well? Or have you exhausted everything that you had noted down?
Well, as far as the aftermath, I understand where you're coming for with Darby, but to me, more importantly, is Hangman's aftermath. This was, as you mentioned, near the end of the point of the part of his story where he is still using the face tunnel, where he still is holding on to the belief that he deserves to go through the face tunnel. Because, I mean, the face tunnel, heel tunnel thing, that's optional. The characters choose which they want to go through, as far as we know. Nobody's dictating it to them. And a little bit later, a few weeks after this, he stops going through that one. And it doesn't tell you whether the character is right or wrong. It tells you whether the character believes that they're right or wrong. And that crossing that Rubicon of, I realize that I can no longer admire myself even. And he's on that path, and it's really interesting watching that path happen. And still is. I'm just fascinated, especially with the whole Crystal for Daniels thing, that the last promo that Christopher Daniels is ever going to cut. Just an amazing way of pulling out some of the character bits. I think it's he's a really interesting character, and I think he's a character that it's very easy to misinterpret. Or I shouldn't say misinterpret. There are multiple ways of interpreting the character, and I find myself going, you know, I'll hear people talking about what he's doing, and it's like, oh, I don't know if that's not how I saw it. Like, for instance, when he goes to he starts back down the ramp.
Yeah, they squeal
at All Out, and the fans lost their minds, like, oh my god, in horror, and he stops. And the Christopher Daniels thing, when he goes back and hits the angel's wings on him, I remember one of the writers for my AE Weekly column said that this time he didn't listen to the fans and he went ahead and did. And it's like, I didn't really interpret what he was doing at All Out as he was going back to hurt Swerve more. I always felt that, like, at that moment, he had a moment of regret and went back. It was going to go back and check on Swerve as another human. And when he heard the horror of the fans, he realized what a monster they saw him as. He realized that they thought he was still going to hurt him more after what he'd already, you know, he'd already smashed his skull. It's like, my God, they think, you know, it's a very Darth Vader-y thing, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Actually, one of the people in AE Weekly also compared him to Anakin. It was an interesting analysis, and I think that it is an interesting, like that there are some character parallels between the two.
I think you put it very succinctly when you said, like, the way that they use the tunnels doesn't, like, does tell you a little bit about the characters, but more than anything else, it tells you what the characters think of themselves. Particularly a character like, particularly a guy like Hangman, whose attention to detail is exceptional. And, you know, he's such a good emoter in terms of the way he portrays his emotion. He doesn't overdo it. And it would be so easy in this kind of character to overdo it. And he's often very subtle in the way that he conveys, you know, his body language and his facial expressions. And you see that all over his face when you mentioned the thing after Swerve Strickland. You know, I didn't mean this to turn into a podcast about him and Swerve at All Out, but that's definitely going to be a match that I'll cover at some point. But
we haven't covered that one yet.
No, not the All Out match.
One of the best
I've covered the Texas Death match, but not the All Out match yet. I'm looking forward to it. I'm just letting the water settle on what happens with the character. And it's interesting how, you know, we're now seeing him at the upswing of his character, potentially. We don't know, if that, you know, what happened at All Out is rock bottom, or maybe what he did to Christopher Daniels is rock bottom, then potentially he's maybe on the way out. And you sort of see that in his body language and the way he's expressing his emotions, particularly, you know, when Christopher Daniels saw that. I saw someone said, like, his eyes softened. And it could just be me reading his eyes softened and then seeing that because that's what I've just read. But I do feel like you do see that in his eyes, in what he's conveying emotionally. And you feel his emotion change with the way that he's carrying himself body language-wise. And it's not many wrestlers can do that just completely wordlessly, completely silently, and so subtly. So realistically as well.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. His crazy eyes are a little over the top sometimes, but yes, he is in many ways very subtle and fantastic with the body language. But that's a great example of where there are still possible multiple interpretations, a common interpretation of that moment you were just talking about, where Christopher Daniels says that the situation has retired him. He's not going to wrestle ever again. I hope you can be happy. It's like, is that regret? That's how a lot of people are interpreting it. It's like, oh, I feel bad that I did that to him, and I take it more as like, my interpretation of his character is a lot based on, you know, he is addicted to revenge. He needs to get back to, or he's chasing that feeling that he felt when he got his revenge on Swerve, but it didn't last. Mm. And it wasn't just that he ended Christopher Daniels' career, but that the words, "I hope you could be happy now," made him think about how everything he's doing isn't working to make him happy. It's not like, this is not making me happy. He's right. What am I doing wrong?
Mm. And to bring it back to this match with Darby Allin, you know, and kind of what we're talking about with, you know, who, you know, was the Death Riders, was John Moxley beating Danielson the best move? And some people saying Hangman should have beaten Danielson. And, you know, I'm never going to say no to Hangman winning the world championship because he's my favorite wrestler. And of course he would have been incredible, but like in terms of the character arc, like we see very clearly in this match with Darby Allin that he is not in a position mentally where he can win. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you think Darby Allin's taking advantage of these things. What do you think Bryan Danielson's going to do? Like, this is arguably the greatest wrestler ever, particularly when you're talking about technical ability and ability to take advantage. And Hangman, when he was at the peak of his performance, you know, eked out a 1 hour draw and then took 40 minutes to beat him and then hasn't beaten him since. You think he's going to be able to beat Bryan Danielson, you know, like, you know, emotionally he is, and from a, you know, in character perspective, he's not able to win the world championship at this point, and he needs to get his head right before he can scale that height again. Which is, I think,
and not just because his head isn't right to perform, but especially if it's for the world title, because Hangman Adam Page has never thought of the world title as simply a thing to show that you are the best at wrestling. It has more meaning than that in his view. He's given promos and said that, you know, this isn't that was the whole point of his difference of opinion with CM Punk, and that kind of transferred to Swerve. Originally, before it became a death feud, it was about, you want to be world champion, but you shouldn't be world champion unless you deserve it. And so I'm going to stop you. That was what it was about until it became so personal because of the home invasion. If he doesn't believe that he is a worthy role model, he's not going to believe that he should be champion in the back of his mind, no matter, even if he says he wants to be champion. And that's going to keep him from becoming champion. And it should. That's good storytelling for him not to be able to be champion until he gets over this hump of, you know, comes back from rock bottom and no longer has his self-confidence back again, because he believes in himself as, you know, deals with the self-hatred that he has right now, understandably has right now, because, you know, his behavior has been terribly bad because of all of this.
Yep.
You know,
what a wrestler, man! Such a good wrestler.
He's amazing.
Well, you said before he's telling,
just such a storyteller.
Yeah,
such an amazing storyteller as a wrestler.
Yeah, yeah. You said before he's telling the stories that he wants to tell, and we should just let him tell them. I think, like, yeah, man. If there's a company that's platforming him, I'm happy. Like, you know, in some ways, you know, and I'd always just want him to have more platform. That's just that's the main thing. Anyway, look, Sergi, I think we've come to the logical end of our, or a good way, a good point to end. We could probably go on for hours and hours more about Hangman and Darby and.
Absolutely.
But yeah, look, fantastic episode. Really appreciated having you on. If people want to talk to you about Hangman, want to talk to you about Darby, want to talk about you about wrestling in general, where can they find you, Sergi?
Well, the best place would be the Pro Wrestling Musings Discord. We have been doing our best to move as much as possible away from Twitter for reasons. And all of our new articles at the Pro Wrestling Musings website going forward, we'll have a link to go to the Discord for Pro Wrestling Musings readers to give us feedback. And there's that's a great place. If you have a Discord account, or make a Discord account, come on over there and tell us what you think about the different things that we say in our different articles. I have, if you are interested in my thoughts about Hangman, I have a series of articles on the Pro Wrestling Musings website called Blood Feud, about going into great detail about all of my thoughts about the Hangman Swerve feud. Looking forward to finishing that off with the last act from the suspension through their final match, and every week me and a group of writers talk about what we feel was the best aspects of AEW that week, the AE weekly series. One of us takes on each aspect from the best interview, the best match, etc., etc., and the MVP of the week. So every week you can check that out. We always make a point to get it out before the new Dynamite, talking about the previous week.
I've got to say, and the stuff that you and Peter Edge have written on Pro Wrestling Musings about Hangman is amongst the best stuff I've read on the internet about Hangman Adam Page. So I could not recommend yourself or Peter's stuff on Pro Wrestling Musings high enough. I didn't realize you guys had got the Discord active again. I think I'm a very inactive user, so I'll have to jump in there and say it, because I always plug the Social Suplex Discord, but it is a great alternative to the social medias. And you know, there's, you know, lots of reasons to dislike the various social media platforms, and in many ways they are an evil necessity in some ways.
Right.
And they've all got, you know, even like the Blue Sky that we, you know, a number of us went to and thought would be a nice home, that's got its own issues, I feel like. And and Twitter, of course, you know, we don't need to go into those. Everyone knows why Twitter is the best of the worst places to be. But you know, Discord is a great option, so I'll have to check out the Pro Wrestling Musings Discord at some point in the coming week or so. You can also join the Social Suplex Discord in a very similar way. We've got lots of different things you can talk about there. It's, you know, very much like an old forum, I'd say. And we've got a lot of different threads. Each of the podcasts have got a different thread you can go to. And then there's threads for different wrestling promotions. And then, of course, we've got, you know, various other things, sport, movies, video games, TV. Or you can come in and you can look at all the things that we cook. That's my favorite off live channel is chatting to the guys in there about the different things that we cook for our families and our friends in our lives. And of course, I mentioned at the top, there's a lot going on. I've got a lot going on heading into Grand Slam. If you're going to be there, I'd love to see you. Come say hello to me, whether that's at the meet up beforehand or at the arena. I'll be wearing my AEW Match Guide merch, my AEW Match Guide shirt. I really hope to see you there. If you can meet me there. If you have enjoyed the podcast today, you can like or review it on the podcast app of choice. The 5-star podcast reviews really do help. Or you can share it with someone. Tell a friend about it. That is the best way to recommend something. Just tell someone about it. Tell someone you know who trusts your judgment and just say, hey, I really enjoyed, I got a lot out of this. Just listen to this. Give it a go. Give it a crack. Give the AEW Match Guide a crack. Give Social Suplex a crack. Give Pro Wrestling Musings a crack. that is the absolute most powerful way you can recommend something. I also would like to announce, this is episode number 49. It's the 49th match that we've covered on the AEW Match Guide. So next episode, we'll be covering CM Punk versus MJF. We're going to be starting a trio of podcasts. We're going to be doing 3 podcasts about MJF and looking at MJF and his rise in the company, starting with his match with CM Punk and talking about the feud that they had in the lead up to the match. Of course, the match being the dog collar match at Revolution. But to mark 50 episodes of the Match Guide podcast, I'll be doing a special episode as well. So we'll be having the CM Punk and MJF podcast. And then a week later, I'll be ranking the first 50 matches that I covered on the AEW Match Guide podcast. I don't know how long it's going to take me, Sergi. It may well take me 3 hours to go through the top 50 matches and rank them and talk about them. I may lose my voice, but I'm very excited about that. I'm very proud of it as well. So yeah, make sure you stick with me. Make sure you hit subscribe on the podcast so you don't miss any of this. We've of course got the Social Suplex feed and we've got the standalone match guide feed. I think that's everything I've got to plug, Sergi. Thank you very much for joining me. I really appreciate you having you here today. I love the insight you brought along.
I appreciate it. I'm so glad to have the outlet. Love to talk about Hangman. Love to talk about Darby too, but especially Hangman. And congratulations on your upcoming anniversary of 50 matches covered on this podcast. It's a great series, and I'm glad that you've had success with it and that you've stuck with it, giving us this great content.
Thanks, mate. I appreciate that. It's a joy and a privilege. I'm not there yet. I've just got to get one more episode at least in the can for that to happen. Mm-hmm. But as I said, if you come back in a fortnight's time, I'll be looking to cover CM Punk versus MJF, the dog collar match from Revolution, a match I'm really looking forward to diving into. So thanks for joining me today, Sergi. Thank you for listening. If you've been listening out there, if you're coming to Grand Slam, hit me up. I can't wait to see you. And if I don't see you then, I'll see you in a fortnight's time where we'll be looking at that match. And I look forward to being with you then. Thank you all again, and I'll see you next time. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the AEW Match Guide podcast. If you enjoyed the show, then you can subscribe on the podcast app of your choice so you never miss an episode. Also, feel free to let me know on Twitter at Sir_Samuel. I'd love to hear from you. The AEW Match Guide podcast is brought to you by the Social Suplex Podcast Network, where you can find many other fantastic podcasts discussing not just AEW, but all parts of the world of professional wrestling. Looking forward to seeing you again next week. I'm Sam Brown.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.